Oh, well, welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, so let's get straight to it. So we've obviously had these pretty substantial allegations that have been made by two women about sexual harassment. So what do you make of this Liberal Party proposal for a code of conduct? Do you think it sort of addresses the underlying issues?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. The thing about codes of conduct is it really depends on the rules that are actually written and whether or not they're enforced. So a code of conduct is a useful and effective tool if it's written well and implemented well, because what it effectively sort of says is it provides benchmarks and a clear process for people to be able to make complaints. What isn't really very good is if you have an ambiguous process or processes that effectively sort of entrench ideas around, like, the fact that women might be making vexatious claims or which might have ambiguous punishments or which might not have very clear definitions, which actually just increase the level of uncertainty.
So, I mean, there's an enormous actual power disparity when we're talking about between a sort of political staffer and often they're the highest of the politicians themselves and the sort of senior advisors. Do you think that this code just that it actually deals with that power disparity, that people will be comfortable coming forward, or is that an area where, you know, similar to other workplaces, that it's still a lot of potential for abuse, in that a lot of people, you know, when they're starting up in a career, are going to be fearful to report because they're worried it's going to affect their career?
Yeah, I think these are really pertinent questions, and I'm not sure there is really a good and easy set of answers. So in this specific case of these two women, you know, they are specifically complaining about the behaviour of two other staffers, and so that sort of helps in that regard. But the Greens actually have undergone and developed a code of conduct and sort of complaints procedure in the light of their sort of ongoing scandal that was sort of racking that party last year. And some of the good things about their policy, which is sort of quite closely based on the sort of the Human Rights Commission sort of framework for employers, is that it sort of has quite clear informal and formal procedures. And it also sort of says that in the case of a big power disparity, that might just switch over into a formal procedure in any case. And so informal procedures are usually related to seeking a resolution. So, for example, if I feel I'm being harassed in the workplace, but I don't think it's of a criminal nature, I just want it to stop, that might be a good candidate for an informal kind of process, where there'd be like mediation and there'd be an agreed understanding of what the behaviour was and how it was going to be ended. Whereas a formal process requires an investigation and a finding of fact, and it may also result in referral to the police and so on and so forth. And so I guess that's the problem. If you've got a code of conduct that doesn't necessarily have clear definitions about what kinds of behaviour constitute sexual harassment, if you don't have flexibility for complainants, because not all complainants want to go to the police, you can actually just make it far worse and empower political parties to simply say, well, we've got a code, so we don't need to deal with, you know, we're set, we're good. Or, you know, I guess the other concern is that when you have a code of conduct in place, it's just another kind of way for political parties to sort of say, well, that is under investigation and we don't have to talk about it. So it is pretty fraught, there's no doubt about it.
Now, political staffers are sort of employed also in a different way to many employees, in that there's often not a formal human resources division. They're not quite defined as public servants. Is there areas where, this area could be improved, that so that there is a sort of a formal avenue for people to make legitimate complaints?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the staff at the New South Wales level seem to be, according to the legislation, they seem to be in a more precarious position than staff at the federal level. So basically, political staff, you're right, they're not public servants. They're employed under a separate act of legislation. quite certain in the New South Wales case, like certain industrial provisions are effectively suspended in their case, and their boss, i.e. a minister or a parliamentarian, have a lot of discretion about how to run their own offices. And, you know, I mean, I think it is actually important for political parties to have good quality sexual harassment codes of conduct and policies. Like, they need some kind of disputes and process that is actually supported and well regulated and enforced, right? But, you know, it also calls into question the fact that, like, legislatures probably need policies too. And there's been one introduced in Canada, but, you know, and that was seen as like this very progressive move by the Trudeau government over there, the Liberal government over there. But the problem with the Canadian code of conduct is that it sort of entrenches a couple of quite unfortunate and unhelpful and rather unappealing aspects. So, for example, like, it's not clear what constitutes criminal, like, that doesn't give any examples of what constitutes criminal or non-criminal sexual harassment. Most of the processes are run through the party whip's office, and party whips are given an enormous amount of say in how any investigation will go on, which means that, you know, political parties have a bigger say over shaping exactly what information will reach the public about any kind of complaint that happens in the Canadian Parliament. And it also has, like, literally has punishment provisions for vexatious claims, which sort of, you know, underscores this and reinforces this false perception that women make vexatious claims when, you know, the incidences of vexatious claims are really low. And the final thing about it that's a real problem is that it's actually sort of discretionary as to what the punishment will be for MPs, even in cases where it is found that this sexual harassment has occurred. So there's the kinds of examples of, like, why rules really matter. You can't just have any code of conduct. It has to be a good code of conduct.
And finally, I was also, and particularly the complaint that recently, I mean, the one with the Greens. Now, this also involves volunteers. Now, volunteers may not be formal employers, but they often do an enormous amount of work for political parties of all persuasions. Do you think that also needs to, this code needs to also deal with the fact that a lot of work in political parties is reliant on volunteer labour?
Yeah, so, I mean, I read the Greens policy the other day, and I did note that it specifically relates to incidences that occur between staff and MPs, or MPs and MPs, or staff and staff, and not volunteers. And I know, and I can understand why, in some regards, an organisation hasn't wanted to take on responsibility in this way because they are volunteers. But I think the reality is that, as you say, so much labour in political parties is free, and I don't think it's tenable over the long run for parties to not have some kind of capacity or some way of managing these kinds of procedures. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens in this space and whether other political parties actually follow the Greens' lead in coming up with a sort of formal policy, and how much it looks like their policy and how much they sort of choose to go their own way.
Okay, well, thank you for being on the show.